A podcast of the cinema.
Your name is Alonzo Duralde. You're a film critic, and you are the reviews editor at therap.com. You are the co-host of Who Shot You? Breakfast All Day, Film and a Movie, and once a week or fifth Beatle over at Deck the Hallmark.
Wow.
I'm Dave White. I'm also a film critic. Far fewer credits.
Are you in a hurry this week? You're just like slamming
right
through. I'm in
a hot fire hurry.
Clearly.
I'm Steve McQueen in Bullet today. We got places to go.
You are not wearing a turtleneck, so don't even.
I am never wearing a turtleneck.
Then you're not Steve McQueen in Bullet, are you?
I am as handsome and thin as he is.
So does that make me your Jackie Bisset?
You're my Ally McGraw.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about.
Forever Evans.
That's right. Steal you away from Robert Evans. Or wait, who stole who from who?
Yeah, Steve McQueen stole her from Robert.
Well, that's right. That's what I did. I'm Steve McQueen.
She has agency in this. She left Robert Evans for Steve.
No. We subscribe to old-timey relationship dynamics.
Oh, you're right. Steve McQueen stole her away.
Where people steal each other from other human beings.
In the middle of the night. Swept her off her feet before she knew what hit her.
Are you excited for all the spinach you're going to have in about 90 minutes?
Oh, that's today.
Okay. Yeah, what did you think it was going to be?
I don't know. I knew it was going to be soon.
Have you seen
you
the
bought 50... a barrel of spinach?
Have you
for
seen
some
the
reason?
50 gallon package of spinach?
Yes,
in the refrigerator?
It's in a drum. Like an industrial barrel of spinach.
I must say, this was not my doing.
Uh-huh.
This was the doing of the substitution situation in the grocery delivery app.
They took one look at your cookie order and they were like, this guy needs more cruciferous greens. Stat.
There were no cookies. There were no cookies in the order. There were, however, many jams, jellies, and preserves.
There you go.
Yeah. I ordered a small spinach, and I got the double X.
Woo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so...
You got the husky spinach.
I didn't know... When you get that much spinach, you got to do something with it.
Fast. Clock is ticking.
Yeah, the clock does tick on spinach.
Yeah.
Real quickly. So that's, you know... Dinner tonight is all spinach. Get excited. Get into it.
Are you making me a lasagna? Because I do love your spinach lasagna.
Well, here's that situation, right? Yeah. I kind of have to wait on the spinach lasagna until friends can come back over.
True.
Because it is a big recipe.
Right.
It's meant to serve a lot of people.
And you can't freeze it?
It's not good frozen and then reheat it like that. First of all, the spinach becomes like you don't want it.
Gotcha.
And yeah, it's better like as a one and done and then maybe some leftovers the next day and that's it.
Yeah.
Like you
need... Fridge, yes. Freezer, no.
Yeah. So come around, mid-May, third week of May, last of May, when we can have the vaccinated friends come over.
Yes. Are we going to be checking cards at the door?
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you think this is?
So go get them laminated at Staples, you guys.
I need more than that. I need them notarized. I need a notary.
The notary has to have gone to both injections with you.
We are ready to go down the block to the donut shop on Sunday, May 9th.
Yeah.
That's...
That magic day.
That's the magic day. And so But other, I mean, like I said, on one of the other podcasts, we come back from that donut shop, we're locking the door behind us. I'm not, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not out here to, I'm not out here jumping any guns.
No.
Like, so many
some people.
Others.
The scofflaws
that I sit, that I sit in judgment on right here at this table.
Of course.
I, I'm making my list though. Not of people.
No.
Not of people I'm judging. Of places I want to go.
Yes.
Oh, the places I'll go.
Oh, yes.
And then pick up the food and then come back home and lock the door behind me. No crowds.
Okay, so I'm still going to have to wait.
No crowds.
Even though it's all, the tables are outdoors.
Outdoor tables? Okay.
All right.
We will be vaccinated and... if there's outdoor tables happening, we could eat at an outdoor table. We haven't been to a restaurant since the beginning of March of 2020.
Yeah.
And
I'm thinking about those Monsieur Marcel outdoor tables.
That's okay.
Where Thursday night.
Raclette.
Raclette.
Yeah, I know. Believe me.
Been dreaming about raclette for the last year.
List. So. It is on my list.
By the way, speaking of scofflaws, we have been called out for incorrectness.
Wait. Did we scoff a law or were we just wrong?
We were just wrong.
Okay.
The Ezra Miller thing.
Yes. When we were talking about Justice League last week,
we accidentally.
Neither one of us were aware that Ezra Miller is non-binary and has they, them pronouns.
Yes. So we use the incorrect pronouns for Ezra Miller and. The management of this program.
That will not happen
like
again.
Like to apologize. And
that will not happen again.
We have learned and won't do it again.
Listen, sometimes I just need to be, I need to be learned sometimes because I cannot keep up with the world moves very quickly.
Yes. And our listeners are there to learn us.
I'm very happy that the listeners are telling us things when we need to be told.
Yes.
What those things are. Hey, Ezra Miller. Are you listening? We won't misgender you.
Never
again.
Misses an episode, I'm sure.
Where was I going? I don't know. I was talking about raclette.
Raclette. We're going to raclette is where we're going.
I know where we need to go is films. We have films
sure,
to discuss.
We
have
do.
Three films.
It is why we're here.
To discuss the theaters are reopening. What's
they
going
are.
On?
They are.
I should say, theaters in the other parts of the country have been open for a while.
There's
some of them have been open since like Tenet.
And some of them barely closed at all. Some of them have been reopening lately. L.A. is like
Los Angeles
one
has
of the
been,
last places where it's finally.
Not, there's, I think, a couple of them are now open in Los Angeles right now.
Yeah, I think the big AMCs are open.
Are
like
they?
Century City's open and like the Burbank 16.
All the Burbanks?
I don't know about all the Burbanks.
Burbank 6, Burbank 8, Burbank 16.
I know the 16. I need to double check on the other ones.
It's
so
very
many Burbanks.
It's very important to me that all the AMC Burbanks are open.
Yes.
When they are ready to do that.
Right.
Because I'll tell you something, there is nothing better than the AMC Burbank 6 and the AMC Burbank 8.
Now, is the 6
They're
the one inside
away.
The parking
There's
garage?
No one's ever there. It's like, those are the two theaters I'm going back to first.
Oh.
Because no one goes there.
The one,
at all.
Yeah, the one in the mall, no one goes. They installed the comfy seats next to a Dairy Queen. So there's a lot going for it.
Yes. The
we'll have to take a peek and make sure that Mademoiselle Magnifique is still open.
And they
want it to be. I want them to have made it through all this okay.
The Burbank 6 is my favorite design of a movie theater in the city because
you take the escalator down.
You take a huge escalator down, and then
like Lil Nas X down into
you,
the depths.
Yeah, you slide down a stripper bowl to the very bottom.
Yes,
and then you get to see Snow White, Winter Soldier, or whatever it was I saw there the last time I was there.
I think the last time I was in that theater was literally to see the first Spy Kids. Like that's how long it's
really?
Been. Really?
Yeah. Oh, I've been there since you then. I No, I love those places. And I especially love the going down the escalator into an underground lair.
Well, it reminds me of the, remember the Beverly Connection Theater?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Yes. When they got rid of that place, I was like, oh, I will never be able to ride a giant escalator down into the bowels of a multiplex again. And then I discovered the Burbank Six,
yes.
Which is, you know.
The dream is alive.
Still, I hope they reopen.
I hope so.
I wouldn't want to have to live my life.
Never doing that again.
Only going to the 16, which I hate.
Really? You hate the 16?
Oh, the 16 is a nightmare. I do not enjoy the 16.
I don't mind the 16.
No.
Look, the 16 is an AMC IMAX with an actual legit IMAX screen.
Sure.
And not an AMC Limax.
Right. It is a long, long walk from any one of their theaters to the restroom.
Yeah, yeah.
It is a long, long walk.
It reminds me of, like, there was a family joke growing up where whenever we had to go to the airport to pick somebody up, they were inevitably in, like, the furthest gate from wherever you entered.
Yeah.
I feel the same way whenever I go to the 16, my theater is always at the end of a very, very long corridor.
Yeah. So I don't, crowds. Because there are so many theaters, and because none of them are tiny, the crowds are too much for me. And
well, I'm sure
I'm not going
to
participate in anything that involves a crowd inside
for a while,
or until I see some numbers move in the direction that I need to see them move.
Fair enough.
I listen, vaccine or not, I will not be rushed into a situation.
You're keeping it real.
I'm
real safe.
I have an internal panic room that I retreat to.
And no one has the code.
And this apartment is only the first lock on that internal panic room.
Yeah. Once you're inside the apartment, then it's just like the hallway and Get Smart. It's
right.
Just one door.
Yeah, there's a door that closes into the living room. There's another door that closes into the bedroom. No. I'll let everyone know when I'm ready.
Okay.
To do whatever.
The world will be waiting on tenterhooks.
Yes. Why don't we talk about the most harrowing film first?
Sure.
Because A, we've already talked about it. It just took me this long to get around to seeing it.
Yes.
And then it became nominated for an Academy Award.
Two.
It became nominated for two Academy Awards. Take it away.
Well, Collective.
The film is called Collective.
Yes.
And Alonzo reviewed it on this very program. When was it? November, December?
Yeah.
When it got its Oscar qualifying situation.
Well, it
was
opened,
also open.
It opened
it
online. It was streaming.
Yeah. And I missed it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll get around to it. But the minute you told me what it was about and how intense it is, I thought, I'll get to it later. Can I have Christmas first?
When people are talking about how, like, oh, I've, you know, I've really been exercising self-care and just like keeping it light and watching the fun movies and, you know, revisiting my favorites. I'm like, okay, maybe Collective later for you.
When you have a moment to yourself.
Yeah. When you're ready, it'll be there for
when you. When you can deal with what it's laying down.
Yeah. But, you know, if you're already in a place where you can deal, then great. And if you are trying to be on top of your Oscar movies, it is, again, up for two. It's up for Best Foreign Film, Best International Film.
It's up for Best International Film
and Best
and
Documentary
Best
Feature.
Documentary.
Yes.
Does that doom it for either one of them?
Well, it's only happened once before, and it was last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
what was last year?
Honeyland was nominated in both categories, and I believe lost both categories.
Yeah,
but there's not like a track record really to see. But who knows? Who knows what'll happen? In any event, I'm thrilled that it got the two nominations because it was my favorite film of 2020, and I want more people to see it. And it's on Hulu. So
it is on Hulu starting now.
Odds are that's a thing. You can press a button and you're there. So yeah, this is a documentary about
from Romania. Who's the filmmaker?
A guy named Alexander Nanau.
All right.
It's his fourth feature. I have not seen any of his previous work.
Have I?
I don't think so.
Okay.
So this is a piece about journalism and about government corruption and about healthcare. Like you said, I gave this a bit of a review when it first emerged. But basically, it's about this unfolding scandal in Romania where there was a fire in a nightclub that happened because, government regulations regarding fire exits were not being respected, and then far more people in that accident died of burns than they should have. And that was traced to the fact that disinfectants that were being used in Romanian hospitals were actually diluted and ineffective. And so after the public outcry about that, the government has to sort of like step aside for a year.
About 60 people wound up dying because of this fire, and only about half of them died in the fire.
Yes.
The others in the hospital
being treated
because of bacterial infections.
Right.
Yeah.
So, a new transitional government comes in and is trying to sort of figure out what's going on. This sports newspaper is digging into the whole thing and figuring out who's lying about the testing and who's lying about the disinfectant. And, it just gets this onion of corruption just has more and more layers with the hospitals and the government. And then
with each passing scenario, you think, oh, God. How much worse does it get? And not just how much worse does it get, but how intractable is this
situation.
Problem? Like, who will have the guts to say, outside of the journalists, who I'm surprised weren't murdered during the course of this, who will have the guts to do something about this? And who will care?
And then
you don't want to know the answer.
On top of everything else, once they actually start getting somewhere with this investigation, the government that is currently out of power manages to manipulate the state media to change the subject entirely about something else and distract people from the thing that they were about to get busted on. This is an infuriating movie.
Yeah.
And, yes, it's about Romania, but it's about everywhere else.
Well, in 2020 is about the U.S. and could still be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a very, like, there are facets of the way this movie is made that are very Frederick Wiseman-esque.
Yes.
In terms of there's no direct interviews to camera, there's no score.
Right.
It is that same kind of fly on the wall thing. But it is edited like a thriller.
Yeah. It is. And you're like, by the end of it, you're
spent.
You're done. You're tired because you have been put through this ringer of horror.
Yeah.
Bureaucratic and moral horror. I highly recommend this film. Even though I'm very upset, I just finished watching it about 30 minutes ago. So the reason Alonzo is doing most of the talking is because I don't have hope for the world at the moment. I want to focus on making dinner.
Think about spinach, Dave.
It is such a beating.
Yeah.
And that makes it difficult. Because in terms of, saying to people, oh, you really need to watch this.
Yeah.
Because
it's going to bum you out.
It's going to make you depressed for the rest of the day. If there is, and there always is, if there is a reason, to feel hope, it's that there are people in the world who are still willing to say out loud, these guys are killing people.
Yeah. This is wrong.
Because it wasn't just the people in the fire. Let's be very clear.
Yeah.
Not just the 60 people in the fire who died. Thousands and thousands of people in Romanian hospitals dying every year for bacterial infections that could have been prevented. But the corrupt companies and hospital system and government just let it happen.
Yeah. It is, and
now the bad guys are back in power.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, there is like not a happy ending here. I think though, if you look at it through the lens of this is maybe since Spotlight,
yeah,
the movie that is most like here's how important a free press is,
right?
And here's what investigative journalism can do. And it doesn't end the way Spotlight does, where like they make major changes and they, you know, expose this terrible thing. Here they expose the terrible thing and the terrible thing doesn't go away.
Right.
But at least they exposed it.
It makes you really, I don't know if any of you ever took my advice and watched a Romanian film called The Death of Mr. Lazarescu.
Which is also about the healthcare system in Romania.
But that was a bitterly bleak
satire,
comedy and satire about the Romanian healthcare system.
Yeah.
And it makes you all the more appreciative of the filmmakers of the Romanian New Wave who can take, you know, these desperate ideas and turn them into, you know, engaging narrative films that often make you laugh that bitter laughter.
Yeah.
How they do that is because they are extremely talented.
Yeah, and they're living with this situation day to day. And
right.
And I guess you just reach a point where you can only sort of like find the gallows humor in it. I was thinking about Mr. Lazarescu. I was thinking about Graduation.
Right.
Like, there's so many of these movies that are about, like, you know, the corruption of the people in power and about the failures of the healthcare system that is supposed to exist to serve, you know, the community.
It's on Hulu, you guys.
It is on Hulu.
It's called Collective.
Yeah.
We recommend.
Highly.
We are
maybe during the daytime.
Also very upset.
Yes.
Let's move on.
Let's.
To Nobody.
Yes. Now, when I wrote my review for the Wrap, I literally wrote in the first paragraph, if you haven't seen the trailer, if you haven't read reviews, don't read this one. Go see this movie.
Yeah, how do we talk about this?
Go see this movie knowing nothing.
How do we talk about this film?
Maybe we loop back at the end and do it. I don't know, because I went in knowing nothing, and I was very delighted by turns that it took, and not being the movie that I was afraid it was gonna be within the first like 15 minutes or so.
Let me try.
Okay.
All right. Bob Odenkirk, My Little Women. He plays a beaten down suburban dad.
Yeah.
Who goes to work every day at a company owned by his wife's father. And he hates his job. And every day is a grind. The same thing over and over again.
There's a great montage.
At the very beginning.
Yeah.
Talk about that montage.
It's like, you know, Monday, Tuesday, and it's just they take, you know, the pouring the coffee.
He's very much slam cut sort of, you know.
It's like he's pouring the coffee in the thermos. He gets on the bus. He gets off the bus. He walks into work, and there's always a truck that honks at him that's about to run him over. And then, like, with each passing day, each of those snippets gets shorter because it's exactly the same thing, and you know what they're going to be, and they don't need as much time to represent what they are because they're identical day in, day out.
His wife is Connie Nielsen. So one night, two thieves break into their home.
Bob Odenkirk's teenage son manages to tackle one of them. The other intruder has a gun that she's holding on the two of them. Odenkirk is behind her with a golf club and might have a shot to, like, you know, knock her out.
Right. And then he does nothing. And so everybody around this dude is like, oh, you failed. You know,
if it had been me,
I'd have, you know, like Mark Wahlberg on 9/11. You know, it wouldn't have happened if I'd been on that plane. Everyone behaves like that.
Yes.
Okay. And now here comes all the parts that we cannot tell you about if you really want to enjoy this film.
Yeah.
But here's what I'll say. His character's name is Hutch.
Yes.
And the rest of the movie involves Hutch displaying who he really is and what he's really capable of. Think John Wick.
Same writer.
Without the ballet.
Literally.
The choreography and the grace of John Wick.
Yeah. It's from the director of Hardcore Harry.
Eliminate that stuff and think of Bob Odenkirk as the least assuming man.
Right.
Brought into extraordinary circumstances and how he has to deal with them. In the process, he employs the help of his father, Christopher Lloyd, mm-hmm. and his brother, played by RZA. That's all I can say for you to have the maximum enjoyment of this film.
Yes.
It is exceptionally violent,
mm-hmm.
and it's quite funny. And while you think at first, when all the dudes are sort of like getting on him about, oh, you failed, you're not a man, that kind of thing,
uh-huh.
you think it's going to become this
straw dog,
this phallic fantasy of vengeance,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes a phallic fantasy of a whole bunch of other things.
Yeah, this it's not the masculine anxiety movie I worried it was going to be. It's a different kind of masculine yes. anxiety movie altogether.
Yes, and I had a very good time yeah. watching it.
It's very entertaining.
It's about nothing in the end.
Sure.
Other than dudes wanting to kill.
It is a kind of wish fulfillment action movie that is not one I think I've seen before.
Yeah, it's definitely a twist on a thing you think you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was pleased by this.
Yeah, yeah. I was very entertained by it.
One beef.
Okay.
All right. I wanted Connie Nielsen.
Mm-hmm.
How do I say this without giving anything away? I wanted Connie Nielsen in the film. They hide her for most of the film.
Yeah.
And in my head, I thought, ooh, what if?
Right.
And I didn't get that.
Sure.
Because Connie Nielsen is cool and you want her to have her moment. And you know what I mean?
Yeah,
That's all. I am now reviewing the film I wish I had seen.
I was going to say, that didn't really cross my mind. I would have liked to have her more of her just because she's awesome. But I was okay.
You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you mean. I was okay with them not going down that path.
Sure.
In any event, go see Nobody.
Don't say go see Nobody. Is it in theaters only right now?
It is in theaters only.
Well, right then wait.
Well. Look,
get your second vaccine shot.
Some people
do your thing.
Some people are 2 weeks past their vaccine.
I know.
Dan, my co-host on a film and a movie, he's in the safety zone. He went to the movies.
He's after his second shot?
After his second shot.
And he went to a movie theater.
He went to a movie theater.
Yeah. How was that?
He said it was good. It was like, there were like
50, remind me which Carolina they're in again?
South
Carolina. I'm going to get that right eventually.
There were like 15 people in a 600-seat house.
Really?
Yeah, he went on a Sunday to see Nobody, actually, and had a great time.
Yes.
Exercise caution, follow the instructions of the CDC, do all that stuff. But if you are in an area where it is plausible to go to a movie,
I'm going
to
tell you even.
And you're at a place where you can.
I'm going to take it one step further.
Okay.
You go up to that ticket kiosk, because mm-hmm. so much of the time now they've got these little things where you touch a screen to pick your ticket.
Uh-huh.
And you find out how many people are already in that theater. And if it's a crowd, don't do it.
Well, I think most theaters are still doing the, we're only selling like 20% of the house.
Oh, really?
Obviously, ask at the
do
theater.
Do you think? Okay.
But I think, yes, I think a lot of places are doing that.
All right. Okay.
Because it's a selling point.
My selling point is not 60,000 new cases a day.
I know.
That's my selling point.
I understand.
All right.
A movie you can watch at home, however.
Yes.
Is Bad Trip.
Bad Trip. This is a film from Eric Andre.
Yes.
Did he direct it or?
No.
No. Okay. And it was produced by Jeff Tremaine, who was one of the Jackass bosses. And
Brain Trust.
Yeah.
And I think the title is definitely meant to evoke Bad Grandpa.
Yes.
Because I don't know if there's a name for this genre, but that's what they're doing here.
Fictional, Jackass-style, prank-oriented
films. Narrative prank documentary?
Yeah. In this film, Eric Andre and Lil Rel Howery are best friends.
They're playing characters.
They're playing characters. They're not playing themselves. They're playing fictional characters who are on a rom-com adventure where...
kind of, yeah. Eric, it's a very Hallmark Channel setup.
Eric Andre is chasing the woman he loves...
his high school crush.
Across the country.
From Florida to New York City.
She doesn't know she's being chased by him across the country. Although in the early moment of the, I won't give that away. She knows who he is. It's not like he's stalking her. They are familiar to each other and they feel affection.
Well,
for one another.
She gives him a card and says, well, if you're ever in New York City, look me up. And he of course takes this to mean, well, I'm going to New York City right now.
Yes. And so he goes to right now. This is, mind you, this is a character who is, deranged.
Yes. It's an Eric Andre character.
Yeah, if you don't know who Eric Andre is, you should go look him up. But I'm a fan, and I love watching his show on Adult Swim, where every time the show is on, the set is destroyed, and the celebrities who somehow wind up there, it feels like they've been ambushed.
Somebody's publicist is getting fired if you're doing the Eric Andre show, is what it feels like.
Lil Rel Howery's sister, in order to go to New York, they steal Lil Rel Howery's sister's car.
Yes.
The sister is played by Tiffany Haddish.
Yes.
They steal the car because she is in prison. What they do not know is that she is escaping from prison because she misses her car.
Anyway, she wants to use the car to, drive to Mexico.
And, mostly she just misses the car. And then every scenario you have in the film becomes one in which real people are pulled into the fake action.
Yes.
And it is about their reactions to it and how they, in a very, spontaneous, improvisational way, contribute to the narrative of the story.
Yeah. So, you have people in a donut shop who watch Tiffany Haddish, who is wearing an orange prison jumpsuit,
right,
rip the car door off of a police vehicle and drive it off.
You get their reactions.
Yes.
There are two spectacular moments in a diner and on top of a building where the people who are in the vicinity become extremely involved.
Oh, and at the scene of an accident as well.
And at the scene of an accident as well. It's if you are the kind of person who cringes at this sort of thing where you're worried about,
the innocent bystanders.
The innocent bystanders. I would tell you maybe just don't watch it or wait till the end credits where a lot of stuff is explained.
Yeah, the end credits is sort of if it's like Penn and Teller coming out at the end and showing you how they did all this stuff.
Yeah. I'm gonna issue one more caveat.
Yes.
There's a scene in a Chinese restaurant that in my gut feels wrong.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to feel about it 4 or 5 days after watching the film, because it feels like, you know, it feels like one marginalized group of people targeting another marginalized group of people. And I'm white, so I cannot really speak to this in a way that would have any sort of authority. And so all I know is that it felt wrong in my gut. Like it had gone, like they had gone too far in this situation.
There's also the complicating factor that the director is Japanese American. His name is Kitao Sakurai. He was actually a kid actor, but then has directed like a lot of the Eric Andre Show episodes.
Right.
So, yeah, I know it's that part of the film didn't quite sit well with me either. But I would love to hear from some Asian critics how they feel about, you know,
that moment in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't feel like I can speak about, you know, what I see other than that, like I said, that feeling in my gut, like, this is what's happening right now.
And this is a movie that's pushing it in a lot of ways, as you might imagine, right, in a Jackass-adjacent comedy.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, but I, you know, on paper, I think I would be like, I don't know if I want to see that, but I laughed
consistently.
Yeah.
You have to be in the mood for this sort of thing.
For sure.
The narrative is irrelevant. There is a framework of a rom-com that is meant to be turned inside out and upside down.
Yeah.
But that stuff is just very thin connective tissue.
Yeah, the plot is there to hang the pranky stuff.
Between the pranky stuff.
And in the closing credits, you see like the times that didn't work.
The times that did not work. I read an article about this film after the fact, where Eric Andre talks about how every single name in the film, him, Lil Rel Howery, and Tiffany Haddish, all got recognized at various points.
I wondered about that.
Apparently, she got recognized the most, even though they filmed it really quickly, apparently, after Girls Trip. So she wasn't
huge.
She wasn't big famous just yet. But in his words, no one recognizes me if they're over 45. He goes, there's not a mom on the planet that knows my face.
Right.
He said, but people recognize her. Chris Rock was originally meant to be in the film. They shot scenes with him, but he couldn't get it done because everyone kept recognizing him. He got busted every time he tried to play this character.
Before Tiffany Haddish was in Girls Trip,
yes,
she had been on The Carmichael Show.
Yes.
Which wasn't like a gigantic hit, but definitely had a following.
Right. Yes. So she got recognized some. And she wasn't even cast in the film. One of the first scenes they did was the thing where they go into the barber shop and get chased out by the guy with the knife. And that was the first day. Uh-huh. And Lil Rel Howery was so upset that he called Tiffany Haddish that night. And he said, I nearly got killed and it's only the first day. A guy tried to stab me and it's only the first day. I don't know why I said yes to this. I want out. And her response on the phone was to laugh loud and long at him. And then she called Eric Andre and said, I want to be in your movie. Put me in this. Because I want to do this stuff. And they're like, this could be dangerous. And she's like, I don't care. Because they were also in this sort of redneck honky-tonk bar.
Yeah, this is all shot like mostly in the Southeast.
And a guy was about to beat up Eric Andre and they have to like stop everything and pull the guy off.
Yeah, he's like doing the safe word.
Yeah. So a very, you know, a complicated film to shoot, doing the things that they were doing,
yeah,
and having to be unknown and dealing with the variable of regular folks out in the world maybe not wanting to participate.
Right.
Now, obviously,
they signed the release.
Even the people who became borderline violent with them signed the releases yeah. after the fact when they said, hey, guess what? It's only a movie. You know?
I mean, this is what Sacha Baron Cohen does.
Yes.
You know, with the Borat of two, you know, differing effect, obviously. But yeah. Remind me what the barbershop scene is. I don't remember now.
They go into the barbershop with the thing that's connecting them.
Oh, right.
Okay.
And they're looking for a pair of scissors.
And they're looking for a pair of scissors. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. All right. We have a 5-star review.
And I'm going to read it.
If you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it here on the program.
I'm going to read it. Here's my new thing. I've decided this about myself.
You're going to be okay with praise?
I have decided that no matter how I feel about... Because here's the thing. It used to not get to me reading the 5-star reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the course of time, I just thought, when people say nice things about me in public, it makes me feel like I want to slink away and hide my face. Privately, in person, on a day-to-day basis, any human being can say to me, I think you're swell, Dave. And I'll be like, yay, I feel great all day because of that. Would you like me to bake you a cake? I will, because you said you liked me. Like, I'm very easy with that. But there's something about reading someone saying nice things about you and me and the show that makes me go, oh, I don't know, I'm not worthy. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm going to get over it.
Okay.
I'm going to get over it. And I'm going to get over it by A, not complaining about it anymore.
Great.
Not wincing openly, not talking about my discomfort. I'm going to pretend that doesn't exist and I'm not going to bother anybody listening about it ever again.
That's exciting.
And I'm going to read the 5-star review, and I'm going to take the compliment. See, here goes.
You are capable of growth.
Don't talk to me. This is from an unknown person. No, it's from G-Bonus.
I think it's maybe G-Bones.
G-Bones. Okay. Regardless of how much you love movies or consume media, the discussions this married couple have are so comforting and enlightening, you'll find some joy in every episode. Their relationship and banter holds decades of love and shared experience, but that certainly doesn't mean agreement. I appreciate their pacing and personalities. I know what that means.
She's fine with the fact that it takes us 20 minutes to get to the movie part.
And the fact that I'm a very slow talker.
There is that.
With too. My sentences.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe she listens at 1.5 speed.
I appreciate, do you know that this person is a lady?
I don't know anything.
Okay. Let's say they, because we don't know.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate their pacing and personalities, their views, and how they express them. Thank you both for the passion and work that you put in.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, G-Bones.
We appreciate it.
Here's a letter. From Aaron. I've been getting caught up on the podcast recently and realized that in regard to Hollywood's latest long-delayed flop, Chaos Walking, I do have something to add. I was a big fan of the source material.
Okay.
The Knife of Never Letting Go is apparently the name of the book that
it's based on.
The author...
Adapted it or co-adapted?
I don't know. Read it in middle school and have read both of the book's sequels as well. The main thing I want to let you guys know is how the books deal with the queer subtext that you briefly touched on in your review. As Alonzo mentioned, Tom Holland's character, Todd, is being raised by two men who share a bed, and that's as far as the film goes, in implying anything queer. From what I remember, that is more or less accurate depiction of how the relationship is depicted in the book, but while not being explicit, the book heavily implies through the narration that those characters are in fact a queer couple.
Huh.
The backstory that emerges is actually tragic, as you gradually realize they are two queer men who have chosen to live in a town of violent misogynists for the sake of shielding and protecting their son.
Fascinating.
The book was released in 2008, and the nature of that relationship being strictly subtextual seemed to be more due to the book being aimed at young adults and publishers at the time viewing gay relationships as not for kids. Mm. The man who wrote the book, Patrick Ness, is gay.
Oh.
And also is one of the credited screenwriters on the film. Okay. I wonder if he ever considered making the depiction more than subtext in the adaptation. Would a big studio even allow that? I do not know. But it's something to think about.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. This was a, as you point out, a troubled production. You know, it was originally shot, I think, like 2018 or something, and they did extensive additional photography. So who knows what it was in earlier drafts and earlier cuts. Like, you know, that could have disappeared at some point, or maybe it was ever there. Like, who knows? But thank you for writing, Aaron. I did not know what the... I knew that there were books, but I didn't know what the whole deal was.
Next one is from Lynette. Oh, wow. Am I allowed to say your last name, Lynette? Because... No, it's too... There are...
It's on the public Patreon page.
Oh, it
so
is?
It's not a secret.
It's yet. Public? It's public? Okay. Yeah. Well, we just wound up rewatching a sketch from SNL this weekend, the Country Roses CD collection. And one of the Amy Poehler does Lynn Anderson.
Yes.
Now, Lynn Anderson was the singer, the country singer of I Never Promised You a Rose Garden. The very first live performer I ever saw.
Oh.
I was 6. I was at the Rochester County Fair.
I was about to say, was this a fair?
I was at the Rochester County Fair in New Hampshire. And my aunt, Inez, yes, I know, but that's how they said it. All right. Hill people. I come from hill people. They saw it written down somewhere and they thought, well, that's pronounced Inez and that's your name. So my aunt Inez and I sat in the bleachers and watched Lynn Anderson sing I Never Promised You a Rose Garden when I was 6 years old. A fond memory to this day.
Did Con Can come out?
It was 1970. So the answer to your question is
no.
There was no house music then. Lynette says,
yes.
I have no desire to watch the Snyder Cut. Me neither. You're like me, Lynette. She continues, I also loved Birds of Prey.
Oh, yeah. Fun stuff. Yeah, the Snyder Cut, we now have the black and white version of the Snyder Cut. No, thank you. No, thank you.
John says, having just watched Billie Holiday versus the United States. Wait, is it called United States versus Billie Holiday?
I think so.
Okay. I was looking for something to raise my spirits. I came across I Care a Lot.
Oh, not a spirit raiser.
Is that a film or a TV show?
It's a film on Netflix.
Described as a black comedy, my favorite type, starring Rosamund Pike, whom I love.
Mm-hmm.
The film confuses me, and I'm hoping you can provide your opinions. Well, I can't, because I haven't seen it.
I have.
Whether I agree with you, I find listening to your discussions helping me to clarify my position. I thought the film was well made, compelling, solid performances across the board. If that was not enough, Peter Dinklage's beard was worth it on its own. My main issue is that I did not find it funny. And unlike Borat 2, which I did not funny, like yourselves, but I could see there were jokes. With I Care a Lot, I just could not see any jokes. I find the abuse of the legal system to asset strip the elderly so disgusting that it was hard to move beyond that. Because Marla, Pike's character, is acting completely within the law, the immorality of her actions are front and center. She seems to know she's a bad person, but she wants to be seen as a good person, if that makes any sense. In comparison, Roman, Dinklage's character, is a gangster and a sex trafficker. But there's no doubt in anyone's mind that he's the bad guy. I think that this limits my capacity to laugh very much. It makes me wonder if this issue is too heavy for comedy. The plot is a little too preposterous to work as a classic drama and too dark for comedy. Any thoughts would help. Take care.
Yeah, I agree. I had the same issues with that movie. I think that it is trafficking in such bleak commentary about an actual thing. And an actual thing that leads to human beings being treated so miserably and terribly.
Right.
That it doesn't work as a satire. It's not remotely funny. And it's not, I mean, look, if you want to make a blistering satire about the horrors of capitalism, great. I encourage you to do so. But this movie just felt kind of hollow and cynical to me because she, you know, the Rosamund Pike character is awful and doing awful things. And we're supposed to somehow relate to her because, like, she, you know, she's been poor and she doesn't want to be poor anymore or something. It just kind of this sort of tossed off, like, I deserve the finest things because I say I do. Right. And if that means, like, forcing people to, like, live in substandard old folks' homes and being separated from their families because I know how to work the legal system, it's like, ew. It's, right. You know, I don't think the execution works with this. I think they couldn't quite land on a tone that would bring this forth as a story they're trying to tell, either as a dark comedy or as a serious drama. So it's just sort of unpleasant. It was just, I just found the whole thing unpleasant.
All right. Well, I didn't know it existed for the most part. So yeah, it premiered, it's not on my list.
It premiered at TIFF and it came to Netflix. I don't know if they were trying to get, like, you know, Oscar nominations for, you know, Rosamund Pike or whatever, but
maybe
they did not.
Everybody's always trying to get some kind of award for what they did.
I suppose so.
You know?
And I like Rosamund Pike a lot too, but this character was so just awful. You're writing the whole movie for, you know, for Georgie Minifer to get his comeuppance, you know.
Well, all right. Is this a short episode?
We're a little under an hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
Golly.
But, you know, next week we have a ton to cover.
17 films.
Yes. No. But we'll have Godzilla.
5-hour episode.
We'll have Godzilla versus Kong to talk about. We'll have The Unholy to talk about.
Yeah.
All kinds of stuff. So,
Problematic Eric Rohmer.
Yes.
We just learned this week.
We'll more than make up for it next time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, check out our friends on the internet. Go to the Critically Acclaimed Network and see what Bibbs and Whitney are up to. Check out the Schmoes Know, Dennis, anyone with Dennis Hensley, the Comics Canon. I'm going to be on the Comics Canon this week.
Hooray.
Talking about the
comics,
the Keith Giffen run of Justice League International. So that's going to be a lot of fun. It's as far from Zack Snyder's Justice League as you can get.
I see.
Without actually being super friends.
Take your word for that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The Sewers of Paris.
There are moments when you and Kurt
go into a nerd hole. So
start
deep.
Talking, and I look at Lane, Kurt's wife, and I go, I just give her that face of I don't know, and she gives me the face of it's fine.
Well, y'all can go have a conversation while Kurt.
Oh, we
and I
do.
Are,
oh, we go. Do.
I'm sure you do.
We have girl talk.
All Things Cozy, Fat Guys at the Movies, The Workroom, Big Fat Gay Podcast, Criterion Cast, Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show for free at Apple Podcasts. Once again, leave us that 5-star review. We'll read it on the air. Join our Patreon. Hey, I forgot to mention.
Sure.
Patreon.com.
You can do that.
/linoleumknife. A lot of fun stuff. You'll be glad you did. You can leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Stitcher Radio and Spotify, Google Play, Amazon Music, CastBox, Podbean. Follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. Follow him on Twitter at Bluetopia, BLEUTOPIA. And, of course, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We appreciate you listening, and we'll be back next week with more. Until then,
goodbye.